Sweet.
Smashing.
Smashing. That's appropriate.
Got to speak, the proper English when you're in England.
The proper
We
English.
are in England.
We are in England.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Yeah, so we're in England, London, King's Cross right now, recording this
yes.
from the Great Northern Hotel.
Great Britain, United Kingdom.
United Kingdom.
GMT.
The proper time zone.
GMT.
The only time zone.
And drinking beer, which explains some of the idiocy, sorry.
Yeah, we're drinking, well, Foz is, hang on, I'll open Foz's drink for him. Foz is drinking a canned gin and tonic, which I have to say, this is a genius idea, and I wish they did this in the United States, because I might actually start taking, drinking gin and tonics.
This is why you need to move to the UK. Much more civilized place.
It is.
Yes, very... in the United States, what you get is wine coolers, Smirnoffs.
No thanks. This
Seagram, what was it, wine coolers? We had like Smirnoff raspberries or something downstairs, right?
I think so.
It's pretty disgusting looking.
I'm thinking back to the bottles in James' days.
Yeah, and Zima.
Oh, God.
Zima make a comeback every like 10 years or so, whether it needs it or not.
They keep trying. But they lost Scott Bakula, and ever since they lost Scott Bakula, it just doesn't cut it.
It's just not the same. So what are we doing here? I mean, I guess that's kind of an important question. Seth, you were here for... We won't say the W word, because we don't want to get you in trouble.
I wasn't technically here for work so much as I happened to meet some people when I got here.
Yeah.
You'll recall earlier in the year, there was some... I think it was late last year I bought them, but a bunch of really cheap premium economy fares on British Airways from Berlin to New York that I bought. And I bought three of them. And I finished the last of those trips up a few weeks back. But when I was booking them, it was sort of a random, I'm probably going to have to go back. Yeah, I have to pick a return date to get the cheaper ticket. And I picked it a few weeks out into not knowing really when, but I was like, maybe Memorial Day, I'll go back to Europe. And so I picked like the Wednesday of Memorial Day weekend to come over. And then after all of that, managed to secure things to do once I got here. And
including us.
Hanging out with you guys. Yeah, it conveniently lines up with, what are you doing here?
Foz and I flew the inaugural Portland to London Heathrow flight on Delta. Got here this morning at 11:10.
Yeah, it was
like
a good, well-timed flight.
Yeah, left at 5 o'clock, got a good amount of sleep, nice dinner. It was good.
So 5 o'clock's a reasonable departure time, especially from the West Coast.
From the West Coast, yeah, it was great. About a 9.5-hour flight, so it was kind of perfect.
I mean, compared to, like, the new United Munich flight that leaves at, like, 2 in the afternoon. Yeah. Isn't there an early Frankfurt flight, I feel like, maybe?
There's a 2 o'clock, and there's a London and a Frankfurt flight from San Francisco. I'm doing the Munich flight in a few weeks. I am not looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And Delta flies Amsterdam from Portland at, like, 1:40 in the afternoon, which just seems like a terrible idea.
Wasn't there, like, also, like, a 2:45 out of O'Hare?
Oh, yeah. And there's an early Dulles flight to get into all those early
I know there's, like, the 4 o'clock out of JFK also.
On Lufthansa. Yeah, yeah. We've talked about timings of flights before. It just like we get it. Like it tries to time with connections in Europe. But for people who are like actually ending their trip in the city, the destination city, that.
But it's an interesting thing, right? So.
Well, is this route O&D or is it connecting?
Yeah.
I mean, look at United out of Newark. So many flights leave around 5 and a lot of those are O&D. They are not connecting.
Yeah.
Like Hamburg, Amsterdam, all these things are not connecting.
And they should be later in reality. Like it would make more sense.
Well, there's. Some of them have some. Connecting,
but is it more about coming back to the United States
at the right time?
At the right time to connect to the banks out of Newark.
Yeah, probably. You're right. I mean, they are all a little early for.
Well, I mean, most of those get into Newark at noon, and there's really like the afternoon blank.
Yeah, most stuff doesn't leave till 3.
Yeah,
starts
leaving at 3:05 and into that 5.
Which is where putting us aside, most people want like a 3-hour connection coming off a. Long-haul international flights, you clear immigration, clear customs, deal with waiting for bags, deal with rechecking and all that stuff.
Yeah, seems like a long connection.
Yes. So most people aren't us.
Well, in the festivities at PDX, we didn't spend a lot of time there. I got to the airport a little late. I didn't think about
to work.
Yeah, I had to work, and I was coming back to the office, and traffic was a lot worse than I figured it would be, being Memorial Day weekend. And that was
our pilots got stuck in the traffic.
Yeah, our pilots were stuck, showed up a little late.
Those jerks.
But the festivities were cool. They had like a British telephone booth. They had a DJ and some other things. What else? They had the mayor speak.
Some folks dressed up in British garb.
Yeah. It was cool, you know.
Dare I ask, because we've walked around today.
What is British garb?
What is British garb?
Not the kind we saw today, but the ones you see on all the posters.
Okay.
Yeah, with the headdress thing.
With the
beef eater kind of?
Yes.
Look? Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. not the ass cheeks look, if that's what you're referring to.
I prefer that more.
I do not, in most cases, because...
It really depends on who it's on.
Well, I just don't like it. I think it's, like, kind of a trashy look to begin with. Like, I just think about, like, what I look like in those shorts. I'm like, I don't know.
I would rather not think about that. Thank you.
My takeaway is get Jess a beef eater outfit.
I'll tell her you said that. I will tell her you said that.
I may leave.
Wow. That might be a first.
I'm just not that into, you know, Steven's kink.
I'm not into it either. I'm just...
You're offering to buy the outfits.
No. I said the takeaway was suggested.
Suggesting. It was good. All around good flight, though.
You guys like the seat.
You guys both got business class, Delta One.
Yes. On a redemption.
On a Sabre level, low level redemption.
On Alaska. Before that.
Before that partnership fell apart. But also on a inaugural flight, which is a little weird.
Which had, I mean, most of the front cabin, from what I saw, was people either with the Port of Portland. The mayor was there, or it was people with, like, the Chamber of Commerce.
I mean, it's your standard inaugural press junket kind of crew.
Yep.
Kind of amazing, and then you guys.
And then us, too. Randoms.
Should have, like, played it up. Started, you know.
I did get a picture in the cockpit with the crew, which was kind of cool. I was like, hey, guys, you mind? They were in the middle of a checklist. I was like, you mind if I take a photo? And they're like, yeah, sure. Let's get the flight attendant. And she, like, took a photo of all of us. It was kind of nice.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was great. Crew, I think that I was telling Foz earlier, the crew was pretty good, but I wonder if that has to do with it being an inaugural and kind of having, like, their best people on the flight. Hated the seat. The Delta One staggered 767 all-aisle access seat is possibly the worst seat in business class lie-flat that I've ever been in.
Worse than pre-merger United?
Worse.
No, he said all-aisle access.
Oh, okay.
Well, I would even go as far as lie-flat seat in general.
You think it's worse than the 242?
If I can get on the two side, I would much rather have the two side than the seat.
Wow.
At least in the two side, I can roll over.
I would definitely pick the SCO seat over the Delta seat. I don't know about the pre-merger.
SCO meaning the Continental 222 seating. Yeah, it's just, it's tight. I mean, I get why they did it. It's right. All aisle access. The TV screen is abysmal. It's like tiny.
It escapes me that they invested all this money and they got 7-inch, maybe 9-inch screens. And that the armrests don't go down.
Yeah, the armrests don't. That would add so much space to the seat. And there's no storage. There's two netted pockets that don't stretch. So you can put a phone, maybe an iPad, and that's about it.
But you might not be able to get it out.
Yeah, it'll be a struggle.
I was going to say, use a pair of scissors, but you can't have those on board either.
It's just kind of a fascinating thing, because for me, like, the things I think about, and I know I'm not like the typical business class passenger. The things I care about are, is it comfortable to sleep in? And is there storage? Because like, I want to be able to access my laptop. I want to be able to access maybe my phone charger and, like, keep those things kind of together.
But the pre-merger United planes do not have any storage.
I was saying, neither does, like, Club World.
At least you have...
They've got the drawer.
Sure.
You have the tray on pre-merger United. Like, the tray in the front.
Yeah, but you can't...
Like, you can't really put anything there.
It's not real storage.
Did you guys see the thread on Flyer talking about a guy who put, like, his iPad on... that tray in the Polaris seat, like right under the screen, and on takeoff it flew out and slid underneath.
And they couldn't get it out?
They couldn't find it.
It just disappeared into the bowels of the plane.
Disappeared into the airplane. Like, and that makes me think, like, that means it's stuck somewhere near our gearing mechanism.
Like, there's, like, no seeing it because it probably blends in with whatever is on the floor.
And that gear, like, they took the seat apart when he landed, he said. They waited for mechanics to come on and take the seat apart, and they couldn't find it. But that to me is like, one day it's going to shift around and...
fall out and get stuck somewhere else and possibly crushed.
Get crushed, and the battery's going to get crushed. That's what it has me thinking about. Like, I would not be comfortable getting back on a plane where, like, we knew that a piece of electronics was lost on it, and we haven't located it and figured out how to remove it yet. That scares me.
The other thing is, could have slid past the seat, someone else took it.
They thought... I mean, his explanation was, like, there's a hard back goes all the way to the floor, so I didn't think I could go further. Maybe it slid further and went into a different seat. Maybe it slid further and someone took it. You'd like to think that someone's not that big an asshole, but... Yeah. Selling an iPad that goes sliding past you, like on a plane?
Yeah.
That's a pretty dick move.
I will say the one surprising thing about the Delta seat was I didn't feel the person behind me as much as I thought I would. Because the seats are connected, like, you know, your cubby is kind of like the footwell of the person in front of you, like it's the shoulder armrest.
But did you notice that they're not particularly well maintained? Like,
oh yeah,
the screws were coming out, the gaskets were all
messy. My shoe holder the little plastic, it came out. Like, it was, like, hanging out. I took a picture of it. It's hanging out. So, it's, yeah, it's not very well maintained. Which is, you know, everyone likes to tout Delta. And I enjoy the service. I enjoy the food. I thought the food was great.
I just thought the portions were really small.
Small, but it was delicious. Crew was friendly. But, I mean, as far as, like, quality of the plane, I mean, it's a 30-year-old plane.
That one was 18.9 years.
Okay, it was a little younger.
It's been retrofitted since a couple times.
Decent-sized overhead bins, which is good. I mean, I didn't have any space problems or anything, so that was good. And I got the party lab on the front side. I mean, it's slightly bigger, which is nice.
No 762.
No 762, sadly.
Nothing will ever be the 762.
Compared to, you know, speaking of labs, I was on the SpaceFlex V2, which is this, like...
I saw your picture. It makes me just want to vomit.
I walked in just to, like, see what it was like and wasn't sure if I was going to write about it or anything else. As I walked into the lab, my shoulders got stuck between the, like, there's, like, a little handrail on the side to help balance yourself.
Yeah.
And the other wall. Like, I couldn't, like, I had to twist sideways to move through. And I'm not that big a guy.
Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy skinny when you think about it.
And that's the smallest of the labs on that plane, but still, like, I almost feel like, turn that one into a urinal.
What plane was that?
It's a 321.
Give me a curtain and turn it into...
No, you still have a door on it, but, like, at least then you're supposed... Like, if you instead of having the stall sort of fully in the back, you can sort of, like, do an offset.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to sit slightly sideways, stand slightly sideways. You can actually make it even possibly a little narrower if it's just a stand-up only kind of situation.
Yep.
And then have more room for the other half, which is supposed to be the handicap facility.
Yeah, makes sense.
I don't know. There's just, like... I get why they've done this in order to try to make a wheelchair-compliant lab on a narrow body. But, man, was that... a surprise when I walked in and, like, got stuck in a lab.
Like, I was just,
you can always go to the one at the front of the plane.
It's like, I would get out, but I can't.
I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And so we landed at Heathrow this morning to what we thought was a little odd. I mean, there was a bunch of British Airways planes on the taxiway.
More so than normal.
Yeah. It was fairly busy and they weren't moving. They were just kind of all sitting there. So we get to the terminal. Foz looks over and he goes, yeah, there's a BA outage, like computer outage. I'm like, oh, okay. And I mean, we're hearing announcements of
all flights canceled.
Please stay in the boarding area. Do not leave.
They weren't canceled at the time. They were just telling everyone to stay in the boarding hall, the departure hall, excuse me.
Which for you guys were at Heathrow T3, so the departure hall was like the shopping mall portion.
Yeah, they actually specifically said the shopping area.
Yeah, because the way that terminal is set up. They don't announce, they want you to basically be in the shopping mall or in the lounges if you have access.
Well, they do that in T5 too, right? They don't post the gate until...
Yeah, especially for the, if it's
for B
the B and C, they say, you know, we'll be at B and they give you a little bit of time to catch the train out there. But it's, they want you to stay in the shopping mall part instead of just going out to the gate. And that's emphasis, obviously, on merchandising and, you know, generating more sales and revenue for the terminal because, you know, that's where everybody's profits come from. But it's interesting that they... It's not surprising that they said wait here because they don't necessarily know what's going to happen and there's no space out at the actual gate areas to hold everybody, really. But
three there is, right? Because each of the gate areas has...
It has some seating, but not full wide-body seating.
Some of them. If you go to some of the newer renovated stuff, there's massive amounts of seating now.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, they're trying to keep people in, like, a central area. And speaking of, like, there's a BA plane coming in right now.
Oh, yeah. Got a BA777 flying in. So there are some BA planes flying.
They're landing.
They ain't going
anywhere after that.
Well, we saw one from Copenhagen, which had to have left after this whole thing started.
Yeah. But, yeah, BA has announced everything out today was going to be canceled. So, and which also, you know, sort of has all three of us...
a little worried.
To mixed levels, wondering what we're going to do to get out of here.
You were on a BA flight.
I'm scheduled to be on BA on Monday.
And Foz, are you on a BA flight?
I'm trying to book one. I can't seem to.
You can't get out, even if you wanted to.
It won't take my payment. That one's coming from Bombay.
No, good to know. That may have already been in the air.
Excuse me, Mumbai. Yeah, that must have been in the air. Because it's only been 5 hours, 6 hours. No, seven.
No, it's been longer than that.
Oh, it's 6 o'clock. So it's been 7 hours since we got here. So
the outage was before that. Or right around then.
A little before that.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Craziness. I mean, do we know what it was? It doesn't
network
sound like...
Network outage is the best we've heard so far. It seems like it's related to... I mean, at one point, the Twitter team said we can't update our website because of the outage.
If the website was good.
The website actually went down at one point.
It's a 404.
Yeah. It was awesome. And like a generic 404, not a custom.
No, version. No, it was generic,
yeah. Yeah, it was just like a base.
Black text on white screen. Nah. Yeah. Not like a fancy, like...
Oh, we can't find that file. Gosh,
that flight has gone missing. No, we didn't say that.
yeah, that's not the right choice of words.
That page has taken flight.
Yes, there you go. But yeah, it was, they've had a lot of technology problems today. Some things I saw said the phones were also down, which suggests it's not necessarily like their back-end systems so much as the back-end network.
But if it wasn't back-end systems, then planes that were already boarded should have been able to leave. So what we witnessed at Heathrow, that was not the case.
Unless they weren't able to communicate. Like, if they were using the
or
computer.
Or they couldn't get weight and balance done,
yeah,
or something.
With the computers, that. Yeah.
If I don't know. It's down. Bad. But yeah, I'm scheduled for flight on Monday that I'm now, like, vaguely nervous about since I only have a two-hour connection.
Yeah.
It's a separate ticket, but...
At least you're on One World.
I'm on One World, so in theory it's protected, but...
We'll see how that goes, right? Are you still going to try and get something else booked if you can?
Got to find something. There's
not a lot of space.
Not a lot of options. Things started to, you know, between the rebookings and it's a holiday weekend, not a lot of options.
Well, but by the time this airs, we'll all be...
Wherever else we were supposed to be.
Wherever we were going.
We hope.
We hope.
If we're still here, we have other problems.
We can update them next week. Yeah. Yeah. So I covered the Delta seat in the getting here, but Aeromexico, I want to talk about them a little bit. They announced they're starting Seattle to Mexico City November 1st of this year, and then they're starting Portland, Mexico City, starting December 1st of this year. It's a red eye going down to Mexico City, I think, for both.
Interesting.
And then an evening flight coming back for both.
Good timing one direction, at least. I mean, it's like a 3.5-hour, 4-hour
flight. Oh, no, it's longer than that.
It's got to be like five.
That's about 5 hours. Yeah, yeah, it's like a transcon.
I mean, you figure it's 2.5 hours to Southern California.
Still sucks.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me about that is they had to give up a bunch of slots at Mexico City to get the merger, or not merger, I'm sorry, the joint cooperation agreement. It's not even quite a joint venture, but this sort of partial ownership by Delta and their legal collusion approved. They had to give up a bunch of slots. And so, right, that's how Alaska Airlines got some of them. I don't know if they came in through Virgin America or straight up Alaska, yeah, but they're putting some service into LA and San Francisco with their slots. Other people are launching other services into Mexico City, but for Delta / Aeromexico to add service at Mexico City into the States is an interesting... kind of wonder where they're coming from.
Seattle makes sense because of the Delta. Yeah. But I was talking about this with Steven yesterday. With the Alaska divorce, I don't understand how Delta is filling Amsterdam, Tokyo, Heathrow out of Portland.
Right.
Because it has to all be O&D. Or at least has to be... You
know. Well, like Amsterdam would be onward.
Amsterdam could be onward. Tokyo
could technically be onward, depending on...
To what?
I mean...
Well, I mean, they fly... Well, they fly Tokyo to Bangkok. They fly Tokyo... Well, that's going away, but they fly...
Going away.
Yeah, and most of that stuff's going away.
Yeah, eventually. And I think... So I think that's where the rub is, right? Is like, eventually, I see Tokyo... Or Portland, Tokyo becoming Portland... Seoul. I see Delta moving that flight to Seoul with the Korean partnership.
And the 76 would make it.
But isn't there Nike links to Tokyo?
There are some Nike links, but I don't think that's enough to sustain.
I suspect Nike is more Asia than Tokyo.
Yeah, a lot of that's like their bigger facilities are in Vietnam.
Which Korea would be actually way better for connections to get to that stuff.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't like to slam on Portland, but it doesn't seem like it's that big a city, so...
It's not, really. I mean, you think about, like, the metro... I think the whole metro area, including all the suburbs, is, like, 4 million, I think, total. But it's...
Better than I thought.
But it's mostly leisure traffic. I mean, that's why Condor is there. That's why Iceland Air is there.
Isn't Portland just leisure, period?
Yeah, it's just... I mean, it's... yeah, I'll agree with that. I told Spaz, I was like, this is the first flight where I've not been the only person changing into pajamas. Like, half the first class... Or the business class cabin changed into pajamas for the flight. Most of the time, it's, like, guys in suits... On transatlantic flights that stay in their suits for the entire flight.
Did Delta One give out pajamas, or did everybody bring their own?
Everybody brought their own. Totally leisure. Or they wore them on board.
I've done that once.
Just once.
So,
changing the President's Club. Flight to Paris. It's in my flannel pants.
Ready to go. I think the Amsterdam flight makes sense. There's a huge Nike connection there. And to the rest of Europe, really. Yeah.
But our London flight had 56 seats empty in the back on an inaugural. And the
it's early in the season still.
Right. School's not out yet.
School's not out.
Which I think it'll fill up.
And you have to remember, we're weird that like we think inaugurals are special.
Speaking of which, I saw Luke, who we had on the show, maybe a year and a half ago. Yeah.
When we went out to McMinnville.
Yeah.
He was there with his mother's on the city council.
Yep. So that was kind of cool. Got to say hello to him.
Yeah.
But
hi, Luke.
The The Aeromexico stuff interests me because it seems like it's an interesting conundrum because Aeromexico is still an Alaska partner.
Right.
Right. And they're this Delta cooperation thing that they got going on. And so both of those markets seem like smart plays for Aeromexico and semi-smart plays for Alaska and Delta because Delta can feed, Delta's feeding connecting traffic. Delta really seems to be making a play for the Northwest.
Right.
And Delta can feed connecting traffic to both of those flights, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I wonder, like, how much... Obviously, Delta has a significant say in what Aeromexico does. Also,
yep.
They own a third of the company or something like that.
Yep.
So, being able to say, oh, no, you should launch this service to this other city where our bitter enemy has large connecting flow to give you as onward connections. Seems a little weird, but if they know it's going to sell, then, you know, that's not so bad.
And, I mean, I think it speaks to Aeromexico a little bit, too, right? Like, what happens when... you know, you've got ANA now started Tokyo to Mexico City.
Yeah.
Who else?
Hainan Airlines is supposed to try to get to Tijuana.
Yeah. Aeromexico already flies to Tokyo.
Yeah.
They fly to Beijing. It seems like Mexico City is
Beijing or Shanghai?
One of the two.
I think it's Shanghai.
Is it? Okay.
But yeah, it's one of the two. Yeah, there's some interesting flow growing out of there, but also like, you know, do these flight times, I mean, you know, red eye southbound kind of sucks, but does it connect to...
Connects to the rest of Latin America.
What does it go in for Latin America, right? Is this like similar to how Copa
is operating Panama?
Sort of hub feed out of Panama.
It's a good point.
I don't know how much Mexico City goes deep South America. I think those are mostly night flights, not...
Yeah, I don't think there's much day... Well, they do have... Well, I know LATAM flies some day flights from, you know, Latin America to South America. But other than that, I don't think Aeromexico does much.
Yeah, so it's interesting, but...
We'll see how it goes. I'll be interested to see how full the flights are, especially from Portland.
Yeah, well, and, you know, you talk about the leisure traffic thing. Mexico City's not...
Not necessarily a leisure market.
It's not a beach destination. I think it's great for leisure. We have...
Yeah.
We've all... Do we all go with this?
But I love Mexico City.
We've all been there multiple times, whether for a day or three or longer, and it's
one of my favorite places.
It's a lot of fun. It's a great place to visit.
I wonder if, I mean, Aeromexico does operate a lot to, like, Cozumel.
Yeah.
Puerto Vallarta.
Connect through.
Cancun, and just connect through. Cozumel, I don't think, draws enough in the summer months for, like, the Northwest, so maybe they're just connecting those people through. But during the winter, there's a huge draw to those places, so. Maybe I'll try to be on the inaugural of that one, too. We'll see.
I would skip the inaugural of a 5-hour red eye southbound.
I'm with him on that.
And I like inaugurals.
Okay. Maybe I'll get a gate pass and at least go to the festivities.
I'm not going to go. It's not saying you shouldn't. I'm saying I wouldn't.
No, you're saying I shouldn't. let's talk about Delta's Comfort Plus and fixing the middle seat upgrade mess that they created.
Fix is a relative term, but it's better than it was.
So are they no longer upgrading you to a middle seat?
So the backstory... Comfort Plus is what Delta calls their extra legroom product.
Yep.
And it's considered an upgrade. It's a separate ticket now.
Like in a separate class.
Separate fare buckets and things like that. It's not a separate class of service, except that it sort of is, but they won't call it that.
Of course not.
But it's sold. You can't just, like, buy it and then pay, you know, $50 to upgrade, except that you sort of can. Because they also changed that as part of these upgrades. But the gist of it is, it was one of those things where Medallion members would get automatically upgraded.
Okay.
For their elite members, and they'd get upgraded, and you might have selected, you know, a window or an aisle seat, and then when you got auto-upgraded, you ended up in a middle seat, albeit with extra legroom and, you know, free drinks and snacks and such. And this is not surprisingly upset some people, right? Like, is a middle seat with extra legroom really an upgrade? And I would say probably not in most cases, but especially for sort of domestic flights, it's just there's not enough time that you're on the plane that I need that extra legroom versus the window seat that I prefer. And Delta caught a lot of flack for that. So the update is now you can apparently change a setting in your profile that lets you either get upgraded and, you know, your record is flagged as upgraded.
Okay.
And then you go pick a seat.
Okay.
Or after you've been upgraded, if you don't like your seat, i.e. you got a middle seat and you didn't want it, you can easily, online or in the app, move back to a regular main cabin, which, because it was considered an upgrade and was a separate cabin, in the past, like, you were blocked from selecting the bad seat.
Oh, so you'd go in and select a seat and just you couldn't click on a seat.
You couldn't pick in the back rows. Even if aisles and windows were open in the back.
It'd be nice if they, like, kind of held your seat
for
a little while.
So this is the thing that people are saying is, yeah, but if I get the auto seat assignment and don't like it, my other seat will probably be gone. And that's probably true.
Because people are quick when they, if they're watching their segments, they're quick to choose the...
You've got the expert flyer, when aisle seat alert, you know, that whatever aisle opened up and someone goes and grabs it, but the person who was in that, who got moved to a middle seat and now wants to move back, is screwed.
Yeah.
So it's better than it was. It's still not great.
Yeah.
Is what I would say. And that's part of the challenge of, like, this is what they've chosen to make their bookings, right? This is how they've chosen to sell that product. And I think calling it an upgrade is sort of where the problem comes from. It's also, they've expanded selling it as a separate cab, or not cab, a separate class of service, though.
But it's not true, like, Economy Plus, markets. Like we would think of Economy Plus. Like, as far as, like,
premium economy.
Yeah,
it is Economy Plus, like I would think of Economy Plus, the United product.
Which is extra leg room. Yeah. That's it.
And Delta will say, well, it's extra leg room plus extra services.
Like, you get free food?
Yeah,
free
slightly drinks. Better. I think it's better snacks and some free drinks on domestic flights. So, and it is. So that is. I mean, that is better. I would say, if all you're giving me is legroom, it's not economy. It's not a premium economy product. Premium economy to me is a wider seat as well.
Yeah.
And the U.S. carriers differ from everybody else in their view on that, and it's a losing battle trying to fight to tell them that they're not selling premium economy. But we've talked about this. If you go and buy tickets on ITA or Google Flights, Delta Comfort Plus is now selling as a premium economy product in those interfaces. What's interesting is they're not yet selling it out of Europe that way.
Back to the States.
Yeah, and part of that, I think, is because there's some question over if it's a separate class of service or separate
fare
buckets,
charge.
Do they have to charge a different APD? Is it technically a premium, or is it not a different cabin? And, you know, debating with Her Majesty's Treasury Service about that and figuring out what's going on.
Yeah.
But the irony there is all of their partners, or their main, actually all three, and all four transatlantic partners that they have joint ventures with, Alitalia, Air France, KLM, and Virgin Atlantic, all actually have a real premium economy product now.
Is Alitalia still flying?
Yes.
There's a single serving website for that.
Yes. Let me check the website. Yes. Better than British Airways today.
They flew more flights today than British Airways, or they completed.
That's a pretty sad statement when Alitalia beats you.
But right, all of them offer a real premium economy. And one of the things Delta has said is, you know, they're working to make sure that the cross airline bookings will book into the right cabins and things like that for these flights. But right now, I think a transatlantic premium economy ticket on any of those just books into regular economy, main cabin seats on
when you come
Delta,
to Delta.
If you have the onward connection, which is like, you'd think they would have figured out how to fix that by now.
But you'd think that'd be actually like a really easy fix.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Have you guys done premium economy? Transatlantic?
No. I have, yeah. I did it on, who did I do it on?
Turkish.
I did it on Turkish, yeah.
Okay. That was just, you didn't have an onward connection from Istanbul then?
No.
It's a weird thing to me. I've done it now a couple times. And the different ways that the different airlines treat the onward connections on the sort of the short haul that doesn't have a proper premium economy cabin is really strange to me. Like British Airways, you get a seat and coach. No acknowledgement that you paid a slight premium for your ticket.
Yep.
Air France had a separate, and the one time I did it was a couple years ago now, like had a designated row for premium economy on the 320 that was behind their Eurobiz. So it was, you didn't get the box middle seat, but you got the business class meal. And in my case, I thought the meal was better than the overnight one out of Paris, or out of JFK to Paris. So that was interesting. But that was like, I can only pick seats in that row, and there were six of us. So the whole row was full, and the back of the plane was actually kind of empty.
So you're like, I'd rather prefer it.
I got the better meal, but could I then have stood up and gone and taken an empty row in the back? Maybe. I don't know. It was a weird combination of things.
Well, so I had an experience. I bought a United ticket connecting on Brussels Airlines, and got to Brussels, checked in, and they're like, oh, well, you're in this middle tier class. Yeah. I got a full meal. The flight was fairly empty anyway, so I had a whole row to myself. And there were two guys seated in front of me. They were in Eurobiz.
Right.
And then, like, the rest of the plane was packed to the gills behind me.
So that's similar to what Air France did, except in my case, it was full.
Yeah.
My row was full. So it's just weird to me, like, how all those go along. And then, like, there's some in Asia. I think China Eastern? No. China Airlines via Taipei.
Taipei, yep.
If you go onward regionally within Asia on a two-cabin plane, you get business class.
That's wild.
And if it's the 7-4, that means, like, 1980s-era big old recliner business
class. Interesting.
So like you can and lounge and everything else that comes with business class. So there's like it's just weird to me how the different airlines approach that problem because they don't have fleet wide premium economy.
Yeah. Well, I can I just say I'm impressed that Foz knew where I flew premium economy before I did.
Yeah, that's
how did you know that?
I don't remembered.
We talked about it on an episode. That is impressive.
It was very.
Don't ask me about any of his travels. I can't keep track of that.
I certainly can't.
He flew BA, more than likely, and we'll probably make Platinum.
Platinum.
Yeah, Executive Platinum on AA.
I'm not sure if I want to make Executive Platinum this year. The trip over here got me to Gold, or Platinum.
Oh, you'll make Platinum
Pro? Or
I'm not Platinum Pro yet. I think the flight home gets me the dollars for Platinum Pro. I think I'm going to hit the dollars before I'm going to hit the miles.
Oh, wow.
You'll probably hit Executive Plat by the end of the year. We're only halfway through the year.
Yeah, but I don't have really much that booked.
You always
yet.
Say that.
Yet.
I can't guarantee it yet. I don't have much booked. Picking up another business class ticket to the States helped, though. Getting out of here.
Yeah.
It's actually funny. I had a choice of BA Metal or Iberia Metal. The fare sale was available on both. And I picked Iberia Metal, arguably to my own detriment in terms of product, notably because there's no Wi-Fi on board, whereas American has Wi-Fi and it's a work day. It's a weekday that I probably should want to be connected.
Yep.
But the PQDs and PQM, or the PQD earning is way better
with
on partner metal because you earn by distance, not by dollars. Business class.
The question that I have, and I haven't figured this out, is it on BA? So what happens if it's on 001 ticket stock, American ticket stock?
I believe then you're.
That I think you then get the you don't get based on distance base.
Yeah, I'm on Iberia stock either way, but I've had BA stock AA metal earns under the AA rules.
Okay.
Sort of like United does. I'm pretty sure is how that went. And it may have been a stock. I'm trying.
Well, they would know the value of the coupon.
Right? I mean, but there are quirks about the mix and match of that sort of stuff that I definitely have had some where it was like. BA flight number on it was an AA flight number on Open Skies Metal, and so I earned it the AA rates, even though which is fine. I mean, it's what it's supposed to be, I guess, but it was not as lucrative because I'm not paying full price for my tickets.
So
I'm paying what they're asking, but I don't have a special discount. I just buy cheap tickets.
Right.
So with 6 months left, it's foreseeable that you can come back to Europe in that time. I mean, I see it happening. I don't know about you, Foz, but
I have another trip booked on BA Metal in June, if that's what you mean. I have a business class again. I haven't added that one to my calendar yet.
That's the beginning.
And with the business class fares, you're going to earn a much higher EQM rate.
Yeah, they earn it. Well, they earn it 125% EQM.
I thought that was higher now.
They're I class mostly. I think that's only it's 125 or 150. It's not 200.
I think 150 is still reasonable.
Yeah, but I think it's partner 125. A partner I class I think was 125. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. I mean,
Seth slowly becoming the AA shill.
Dude, if you can buy $1,300 round trip business class tickets, I don't give a damn what airline it's on.
Race is a good point.
Well, this is what I was talking about. Like with there was that fare sale just recently with Delta. To Asia
for $1,500
bucks from like Vancouver. I can get to Vancouver for $150.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
Like, and it's like I don't have anywhere to credit that, but it's $1,500 to Asia.
I'll
figure out where to credit it.
Gosh, where am I going to credit this ridiculously cheap ticket to flying the ridiculously cheap ticket?
Exactly. Like
at some point, if you also want 10,000 miles to go with it. Charge yourself an extra $300 and go buy 10,000 miles somewhere.
Exactly. Yep, I'm with you.
And you still have gotten a better deal.
And you can always
them paying $2,500 for a ticket.
And you can always credit them to somewhere that's got like transfer partnerships, like Korean, right? Where I can put UR, Chase UR.
Yeah, somewhere where you can transfer into. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Or just you could open a SkyMiles account. We were just joking earlier. You don't have one. You could open a SkyMiles account and credit them to Delta SkyMiles.
Stop blaspheming.
That's way too much effort.
Yeah. Up and down the West Coast, they've got a bunch of the occasional 5,000-point tickets.
They do fly.
And they fly a lot.
Portland, L.A., Seattle, L.A.
Philadelphia, Heathrow, they always have cheap space.
So there you go. I'm just saying, their award chart, or lack thereof, is annoying. They have some, especially long-haul premium cabin stuff that goes crazy shitty. But they also have some routes. It's sort of like obvious at this point. Like, yeah, the long-haul redemptions suck.
But if you can milk
these. But if you can milk some of the short stuff. And even some of the Asia partners. Like, yeah, you might have to pay a discounted fuel surcharge, 150 or 200 bucks. It's not like BA's 400
yeah.
option. But the low rates on China Southern,
yeah.
via Guangzhou to wherever you want to go, like, not the worst thing in the world, and availability is usually pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I've heard, is that the China Southern
and
stuff is
close to a gateway, so yeah. even if they end on end and charge you to get to LAX first, like, it's only 3 to 5, you know, 5,000 extra points or 7,500 extra points.
Yep.
Like, it's not...
not the end of the world.
End of the world.
Yep,
so,
yep, I agree.
I don't love Sky. I don't love any of the programs, but they all have their place and sort of things that they can be useful for.
Yep.
Right? Someone asked me why I'm not crediting all these BA premium economy tickets and business class tickets to BA. Right? I'd probably be gold at this point, but I don't want more obvious.
Yeah.
The status matters a little less to me. I certainly don't need lounge access.
Yeah, exactly.
I've told you guys my good feelings on that.
Well, we stopped into the Virgin. So part of this, I mean, we're kind of jumping around here, but part of this, we just stopped into the Virgin, what do they call it?
Revivals Lounge.
It was decent.
It's okay.
Nice shower, good water pressure. Yeah, which is
the most really excited about the water pressure.
I was really excited. I mean, they need an AC unit in that thing, but the water pressure was fantastic.
Steven, you're in the United Kingdom now. We don't do air conditioning.
I know, as I sweat here in this hotel room. With the AC going full blast.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Or so we're told.
I walked out of a room that felt like this last night. So.
You could ask for the corner suite. But the AC's working in the corner suite.
We'll have to go ask about that.
So, yeah, we stopped in there. It was some decent, I mean, okay breakfast.
Did you get a bacon buddy?
I did not. I took
did
a shower.
They, have them?
They did have them, didn't they? Isn't that
little bacon rolls?
Yeah, it was. They had those, yeah.
That's one of the only reasons I like connecting through London in the mornings.
Bacon rolls.
Get a bacon buddy.
It was nice. I mean, it was pretty easy to find, kind of like off the beaten path, but
yeah. Well, it was just upstairs on the way to car park.
Yeah. Not a lot of people. It was great. So, there was something else I was going to mention about that, though. Oh, so I'm thinking about doing Lufthansa first back to the States. By the time this airs again, we'll have already decided all this.
But yeah.
What do you guys think?
Have you ever flown it?
Lufthansa first?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, multiple times.
Then it might not be worth the premium.
Yeah.
But I think the first class terminal experience is fun.
Yeah.
I've done it a couple times.
It would be a new line for me. I'd get Munich-Denver.
You're going to be on Munich.
Yeah, I could do that. Or I could even do Dulles, Frankfurt-Dulles.
Well, if you do Munich, the lounge there isn't really the first class experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really drink a ton of whiskey.
I do like whiskey, though.
Will you do a little tasting?
I would do a little tasting. I would take pictures of it just for you. Because okay. You don't drink the whiskey.
Smoke a cigar while you're out there.
Okay.
But the guy put together a rum tasting for me.
Oh.
Last time I did it. I was like, I don't really drink whiskey, but I like rum, and I know you serve a few of those. Like, we got you, son. Don't worry about it.
I take care of you.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, try this one to start, and then give me, like, the giant snifter thing. I couldn't really... I'm making hand gestures. Can I get my whole head inside?
Anyway. It's like a fishbowl.
When I went back, he's like, yep, I got your next one ready to go. And, like, he had lined them up, and certainly I wasn't paying enough attention to care what they were, and I probably should have.
At that point, you were drinking so much, you didn't really care.
You had a really good flight wherever you're going.
Yeah, it was back to Newark. I climbed in upstairs on the 7-4 and fell asleep. It was great. That was back when they had the bed plus seat.
Yeah. Yes.
That was nice.
If that product was still around, I would definitely find the flight on that.
Yeah.
But I have two options. I have Frankfurt-Dulles on the 7-4-8, or I have Munich-Denver on the 8-3-4-6. The line, Munich-Denver, is kind of sexy.
Yeah.
Kind of sexy.
That's 7-4-8.
That's 7-4-8.
Yeah.
I've never flown in the nose of a 7-4-8 or just a Boeing 747 before.
And you'd be on, but then you'd be Transcon United from there?
Transcon on United. A320.
Yeah.
And first.
Yeah, but...
Yeah. Tough, right? Tough call.
Yeah. It's not that tough to me, actually. I don't know that it's worth the premium in points. That's what I keep coming back to. Like, you're going to pay an extra 20,000 points and save 100 bucks in taxes? Is that...
30,000.
30,000
points.
Like, I think the difference for me, though, is that I would refund or move my Alaska reward, which
sure.
I get that money back, and I bought a ticket to get back from Salt Lake City to Portland, which is, you know, a decent chunk of change. That was my big thing, is I could probably save some money. And I told my wife this. I was like, oh, I could fly Lufthansa first and save some cash. She goes, save some cash? I should fly Lufthansa first more often.
I don't think it works that way. Yeah.
I wish that worked that way. That would be fantastic. So anyway, decisions. Let's talk about the TSA. They came out with kind of a little release. When was this?
It wasn't an official release so much as the Wall Street Journal broke a story.
Yeah.
So we've gone back and forth about the electronics ban a couple times in recent weeks. If we're going to have like laptops and whatnot that are banned out of the 10
yep.
Middle Eastern airports, Middle Eastern Africa, if those will also now be banned out of Europe.
Yep.
And
the threat level today in the UK was lowered back down.
Yeah,
to
we went to
previous
critical, and then we're back down to severe.
Yeah. which that's very British wording there, but...
there's also a little bit of, like, the horses are out of the barn, let's close the doors. Oh, wait, now the horses can't get back in, maybe we should open the doors back up. No, there's still no horses? Huh, so weird. I don't know.
Where'd they go?
It's... like, they've gone back and forth now in the U.S., like, DHS representatives or whatever have been meeting with authorities from Europe and talking about it, and for the past couple of weeks they've been saying discussions are ongoing but no decisions have been made.
Yep.
And some people have interpreted that as it's not going to happen.
Yep.
There is a subset of people who are convinced it is absolutely going to happen and it's a matter of timing.
The ban will happen from Europe.
This rule will take effect from Europe. I think it's a terrible idea and it's going to have all sorts of economic havoc. But so that's part of the story. Another part of it was then separately, the TSA has been testing these additional requirements for screening for flights just domestically.
Yep.
And it comes down to your bag has too much crap in it, we can't figure out what's inside and what all this stuff looks like, and too many different things have similar densities.
Yep.
And the X-ray machines work based on density. And so, you know, I've seen the picture of my bag on the screen. It's an absolute mess, and it's mostly electronic, so it pisses them off.
Looks like a Jackson Pollock.
Yeah. Very good way to phrase it. I've had TSA in the past stop me and ask me to unpack my bag and found, like, 30 little USB drives from various PR vendor things. Like, go to a trade show, they give you the USB stick with their PR materials, you throw it in the bottom of the bag.
Because of the thickness of them.
It's the density shape and the density and whatever, and it's a little bit of electronics on it, but when you put 30 of them on top of each other, it apparently just shows up this black blob.
Yep.
And they can't figure out what the hell any of it is.
Yep.
So I did pare down at one point. It's growing again.
Gotta start getting rid of those USB drives, man.
They go in my giveaway bag. Giveaway stuff on the blog. And you get, like, but I also use them. Like, it's
you get a USB drive. You get a USB drive.
Good to have a gig or two, like, that I don't mind giving away to people. Yep. Like, something like this. Like, and here's a copy of the podcast. Go deal with it, whatever.
Foz keeps an encrypted SD card in his laptop that he just loads everything on. And, he's not worried about his laptop at the airport then. He's got everything on this little SD card. So you could do something similar, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
If you wanted. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I could. It's a lot of work. But anyway, so they're now talking about, like, taking all the papers out of your bag.
Which is an odd one to me, right? Like, who is carrying around reams of paper?
Excuse me, can we talk about the guy shredding his junk mail in the lounge yesterday?
Actual shredder or, like, ripping it up?
No, actual shredder. There, in the Delta Sky Club in Portland, there's a shredder.
Of course there is. Because so, for all your faxes.
Oh, yeah, you receive an inbound fax on the machine there, and then you shred it. That makes sense.
So I'm sitting there on a phone call, and this guy just comes up and starts just shredding junk mail after junk mail. I'm like, really? This is what's happening?
That's what I use the lounge for. I didn't go for the drinks. I came for the shredder. Does it cross shred? I'm not interested.
No, cross shred only.
That's interesting. I like that.
But who is bringing, like, your wife, a writer, is maybe bringing a manuscript on
sure.
the plane?
Probably not, but yeah.
But who else is bringing reams of paper?
You remember, though, they've had for a couple years now NCAA football championship, NFL, all those games. The programs are
super thick and they use heavy paper. Yep.
And they have holograms in them also.
So it really messes things up.
So it really screws with the X-ray machines. So there were signs, like, and we were out, I was out in Phoenix the week before the
NCAA.
Yep. And they already had the signs printed and posted. Take your, I can't remember, you're supposed to put them in your checked bag or in your, you're supposed to carry them on, but take them out of your carry-on bag so it was in a separate bin, like a laptop.
By itself.
So they could at least look at it quickly and get it through. Chocolates are the same density as plastic explosives, apparently.
If you couldn't see that on the podcast, I just rolled my eyes.
that was one of the things I think that was listed in the episode and, like, in the story. There's some weird things like that.
We're getting closer and closer to that sketch where we just go through the X-ray machine in our underwear and our bags are just...
But could the paper be for so that they can eyeball what it is that you're pulling out?
Arguably, sure. Oh, there's some funny curly letters on that. We should pull this guy aside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I can totally see that happening. And in the state that we're in, I can totally see that happening.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But is this going to be implemented everywhere now? Is this the plan? Or are they just testing out to see how much it slows things down?
Yeah, that's the other fun part I love is they're saying, oh, it's not going to slow anything down. Because once people learn that they have to take everything out of their bags, the screenings, we'll have fewer bag checks, so the overall process will go much more quickly.
So while we
continue to change all the rules on an ad hoc basis so that no one can ever get used to what they're supposed to do,
yep.
They'll learn what they're supposed to do and things will get better.
We can't even get people who normally travel through the pre-check line to figure out they're supposed to put the bins at the end of the new system.
the automated movers.
People also just don't like put their bins away because people are assholes. So,
fine. We can't do that.
It's not because they're stupid, it's because they're assholes. It doesn't make anything any better. I get it.
So we're going to expect the mass public to understand all these rules and oblige them on within a few weeks, months?
No. So it's taken years and people still don't remember to take water bottles out. Like,
yeah, we still have one TSA guy at the front of the line shouting at everyone.
I got to say, coming through, I would hit the premium security at T7 at JFK, the VA, you know, first class dish line. And in addition to the fact that it's still an uphill security.
This is the slowest security line on the face of the earth.
It's better than the regular T7 checkpoint, I feel like.
Last time I went through that, for the city flight, I waited 30 minutes.
Oh, so you welcome the other day slow this time.
Yeah.
Just a couple minutes to get through. But, like, this was, they did, like, pre-check light. Laptops out, but everything else stays in. And shoes off. But the woman was like, yeah, and, like, at one point, you know, she was, like, sort of in the shouting at everybody, was giving good instructions, whatever. Then at one point, it was like, yeah, you know, I just like to do something a little different every day. Like, you're part of the problem.
telling
she's, like, talking to one of her friends, but, like, at one of her coworkers. But like,
you can hear her.
Yeah, I mean, she was, didn't mind that I was sort of engaged in the conversation as well. She also had the good point of, like, the only time you need to, you know, to someone, one of the other passengers, the only time you need to be worried is if we tell you to only take one shoe off. Then you know something's messed up.
She sounds like she had a good sense of humor.
Of all the TSA agents I've ever interacted with, she was probably the funniest.
We need you to take your left shoe off, but hop through the machine on the right foot.
But that one, the reason I go through that also is because there's no nudist scope there. Guaranteed.
They don't have space for it.
Yeah. Even like T1 used to be, if you went to the far left at JFK, there was no space for them there, and they finally retrofit that and put them in, which pissed me off.
I was surprised to get pre-check on my Delta flight, because I was originating in Portland, and I got pre-check on an international flight, which is kind of cool. Why wouldn't you? I just didn't think they did it that often for international flights.
I don't think there's a difference.
No. Yeah.
The only difference is which airlines participate. Speaking of which, Singapore, Turkish, and Silver Airways, at least, the little props out of Florida, mostly.
They're all getting pre-check?
They all are in pre-check now.
Oh, nice. Singapore,
there may be a couple others, but Singapore is the first Asian carrier to participate. And Turkish is an interesting one.
Yeah, no kidding.
well, because it means sharing data with the U.S. government about all your passengers.
Yep.
And the current Turkey-U.S. relations, I have to assume, are slightly strained given the policy
Syrian.
Of we don't trust you sufficiently at all such that you can't have laptops on your... Like, Istanbul is one of the affected airports, right?
Yep.
So,
That's definitely a conundrum.
Yeah, I mean, obviously... In some ways, I would say this is Turkish being like, no, we'll share our data, we'll share our data. Look, we're complying, we're cooperating. Please,
hoping to get rid of this.
Please stop screwing us over and destroying our, you know, economy.
I wonder how it's going to work in Houston, because there's no pre-check line in E.
We're all connected.
Yeah, so I wonder if they'll just direct people to go to E.
Over time, as the carriers add, they'll just have to, because even Singapore, right.
Even JFK T1 added, like, because Lufty participates in it?
I think Lufty, and then that would mean Austrian.
No, they're still separate.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, but Turkish now is also out of T1, and Lufty is. So, like, you'll start to see...
More and more.
No. So. But you'll see more and more. So, it will grow over time, but I think it was pre-check light for Lufty at JFK T1.
That makes sense.
So the thing that, in regards to pre-check, that I find curious is they keep announcing they're going to limit it to people when they pay for it, yet they still haven't actually enforced that.
Yeah. I don't mind, as long as they staff it properly. I wish they just staff it more.
That's the problem.
They're
just not staffing it. Yeah.
Do the background check.
No, not even. Like, I honestly, the vast majority of people should be able to go through pre-check.
Yeah.
Like, you do your name and DOB checks and make sure you're not on a watch list and then put you through pre-check. But you have to staff it. You can't have one pre-check
one
lane
and
12 other lanes.
Well,
you need to go half and half or...
The line at Portland was one guy working the counter to check your passport or identification. One lady to man the x-ray and one guy to man the...
Walkthrough
scanner. And then the regular line was a bunch of people, but the line was like, it had to be 200 people, and I was the only person to pre-check.
Well, I think, but Portland's a different...
It's totally different.
If you look at any of the hubs, it's a very different...
Well, and you go at 7 a.m. when all the flights are leaving, and there's a lot of people in pre-check. Yeah.
And I think it's, in some places, they're starting to staff it a little better based on real demand, but it's still just not right.
Well, and one other thing about this TSA digital clutter thing is that they're also bringing in ID verification.
Right? Oh, that's right.
Which is kind of a big thing, right? It's actually like they're going to verify that your ID is real.
Yeah, so that they're adding the boarding pass / ID scanner is going to be connected.
Yep.
Currently, they're all offline, right? It decodes the barcode.
Yep.
And displays bits of it on the screen. The person makes sure that the name matches. The new one is actually going to be connected, and apparently is going to be connected to the airline system, such that you can, if you show a valid ID, and it's the ID that, like, I guess like if I show my passport, one of the things says like boarding pass no longer required. Like,
you just show your
ID. Show my ID, and it'll do a check and be like, yes, this person is registered to fly on a flight today, which I find hard to believe is going to work, like, at Dulles, which is one of the test airports.
People buying walk-up tickets?
Like, well, even, like, you've got 100 departures across a dozen airlines in the next 6 hours or 8 hours or 24 hours when I show my ID. Are you really going to check all of those?
Well, and what happens when this issue like today happens when an airline goes offline? You're not going to let them go through?
Honestly, like that, I would hope not, because you'd be screwed once you get through and you're stuck.
Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. But there's obviously always the backup of you can show your boarding pass, and they don't have to necessarily have it, you know, validate. But having it validate will cut back on fake boarding passes, certainly, yeah. And fake IDs to some extent. I think ID is less...
What happens when you have multiple reservations for the same day?
Only you would think of that problem, Foz. Only you.
Yeah, doesn't matter, right? They still let you through.
Well, would they start challenging you? I mean,
where are you going? Why are you going to both Charlotte and Nashville?
Yeah.
I have meetings.
I mean, but it's completely possible that you do a day trip somewhere and then you come back and go somewhere else. I mean, yeah. I've legitimately had that.
Or you've booked a backup flight to a second city because, yeah, you know, there's something likely to go wrong.
For,
yep. Yeah, there are reasons that happens. I'm not worried about that. I think it's going to be valid to enter as opposed to...
I would like not to worry about it, but you give these people a little too much data.
That's fair.
A little too much leeway and they do what they want.
Yeah.
Last thing, since we're running long, I got the we're running long signal from Seth. He must have to go to the bathroom. I don't know.
He's had more beer.
priorities.
I posted a link on Twitter.
That's right. It's awesome.
Yeah, of a was it a C-130 crew?
I think so. I retweeted it, I think, from our account, Lines account too. But I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Couple of Air Force crews landing in Israel near the Dead Sea. There's an air base there, and they were doing some delivery stuff other places, and so this is like a practice run for them. And the trick is that it's 1,000 feet below sea level.
Wow.
Which throws a lot of problems into navigation, because
the flight management computers are apparently only rated to 400 feet below sea level. And so they landed fine, but when they had to take back off, the system's like, you're not on Earth. You're not here. This isn't happening. Like, you can't fly. And so they did a manual.
They did an override of the computer. And
they did the math, and they did it on paper to do the calculations. And it's also, it's a super short field. Yep. It's like 3,700 feet.
Yep.
Oof. And the plane is 3,000 with max brakes and reverse on the propellers or whatever.
It came to the very end.
And they used the whole thing and then backed it up. But, like, it was... And then they were stuck there. And they got out, but it was like... And this is like the first crew that went in told the other guys, and the other guys were like, oh, okay, and then everybody was fine with it. But it was like, they literally, none of the computers worked.
It's fascinating stuff. So yeah. I thought it was really interesting. Thought I'd share it. And
yeah, between that and the, did you read a couple weeks ago the Qantas flight where the computers all went offline?
Oh, I did read that.
Right, this is the one, the Airbus, where they had like conflicting information on the different flight management systems, and because it's all computer controlled with human input, not actual direct control of the plane. There was, like, the system kept trying to crash the plane, sort of.
Just, like, turn it off. It wanted to turn off.
Yeah, well, it was, like, and, like, going nose down and pitched, like, just, it was, they dropped a lot of altitude. And, like, eventually they realized that if they turned the third computer back on, because, right, in theory, two of the three agree and everything's fine, but when all three disagree, the control system basically shot the bed and didn't know what to do. But with only two on, they were able to override enough of it that they
could land,
diverted it and got on the ground and it was okay. Only much later, after they went and debugged the systems and checked this, like, the super detailed logs that the management systems put out, did they figure out what happened. But that's just another one of, like, we depend so much on automation and electronics to make flying happen today that you're like, yes, of course that's better because they're programs and, like, they don't make mistakes. But they're all built by humans.
Yep, and humans make mistakes. And I mean, it's kind of fascinating. Like, we all kind of take for granted how much math and science goes into this, what we consider a mundane process, when in reality there's a lot happening.
So there's your pick-me-up of let's go get on airplanes again.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny, because the Airbus is having another issue with one of the Delta planes. The 330s diverted three times in the last week.
Really?
Because the right engine keeps throwing faults on the computers. One day at a flat...
One specific frame?
Yep. 861 NW.
good times.
So Delta continues to fly it, even though they're like, hey, we got problems with this one. Well, we can't cancel anything. So.
Well, they cancel it. Right now it's in Shannon. So I was trying to do an Amsterdam Detroit flight, diverted to Shannon yesterday.
Huh, I did not know that.
It diverted to Toronto on a previous Amsterdam, and then it was doing a Detroit to Amsterdam and diverted. It landed in Amsterdam, but as they were descending, it started having problems.
Yeah.
Makes you feel great, doesn't it?
Seth is definitely going to go drink some more beer now.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the show, guys. What do you think? From London.
I think we should have cut the last 10 minutes of that depressing and scary shit.
You can find us on Twitter, @dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment. Leave us a tweet on iTunes. Give us a review. We're on Patreon. Whatever you want to do. Anything else, guys?
No.
Yeah. Well, for me, happy flying.
Take care.
Have a good one.